Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Packers fans. Welcome into the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined as always by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood. And as you can tell, we are a little spread out this week. I think Spoon and Ryan are spread one room apart, it looks like, at Lambeau Field. And I spread all the way down to Alabama. I let that snowstorm that was coming in just carry me on down south for the winter and for Christmas. But guys, I hope y'all are doing okay there and getting ready to bundle up for the next couple of days and just stay inside.
It's about all you can do, you know. It's Wisconsin.
Yeah, Spoon and I are so close. I could actually hear him. I could shout to him right now.
Well, let's not do that. Let's just talk through here. But yeah, big snowstorm coming through and hopefully out of the way by Saturday, which is when the Packers will also head south and go down to South Beach along with the two of you to take on the Miami Dolphins. Guys, we just had to turn in our predictions for the paper this weekend. I know we usually do this at the end of the podcast, but I'm kind of jumping around. And I was saying that, you know, it seems weird to say that about these two teams, but based purely on the win loss column of the past couple of weeks, these are two teams going two different directions in a way that actually benefits the Packers. However, that's just in that one facet. And I feel like Sunday will be when we see the true colors of both of these teams show once again. The Miami's too fast, too strong, and I don't feel like the Packers have what they need to measure up against that, especially Miami's offense versus the Packers' defense. There's no speed there to match what Miami can do at every facet of the field, it feels like. I mean, I'm going to let either one of you jump in here. Does it feel like that's the case to you as well?
Yeah, I think that's fairly accurate. I think, I don't know. Miami hasn't been playing great. The Packers have been and has lost to some really good teams. I mean, they've lost at San Francisco and they lost at Buffalo and they lost against the LA Chargers. So they've been on the road for a long time and they played some really good competition. So I'm not making too much into their record or their three straight losses. They did San Francisco and LA found ways to shut their offense down, but Buffalo didn't. And so I think they've kind of regrouped a little bit. So I expect that them to, attack the Packers defense heartily. Again, like we talked about after the game, I think it's going to come down to how well the Packers can control the ball with their running game.
Yeah, that's the thing that I wrote in my prediction is that if you just look at three-game losing streak and two-game winning streak for the Packers, it's a bit misleading on both accounts because who the Dolphins have lost to, and again, as Spoon said, each on the road, probably the best team in the NFC right now is the San Francisco 49ers. If I had to pick a Super Bowl right now, I'd take the 49ers versus the Bills. Bills are my preseason pick. They lost to two of them. And then there's only five teams in the NFL that have double-digit losses this season. The Packers just beat two of them. So to your point, Cassidy, seeing their true colors, the Dolphins are not as bad as their three-game losing streak would indicate. The Packers are not as good as their two-game winning streak would indicate. This is a good Dolphins team, and this is a Packers team that is, I think, really trying to discover or find out about itself what it is, where it's at. It's not the worst in the league. Has it improved, or has it just beaten the worst in the league? We'll find out on Christmas.
There are three dynamic playmakers on the Dolphins offense. And that's not even including quarterback Tua Tagovailoa. You have Jalen Waddle, Raheem Mostert, Tyreek Hill, the latter of which is quite possibly the fastest man in the world. I know he wants to race Usain Bolt to like confirm that, but I mean, he's probably one of the only people that could really give Usain Bolt a run for his money. Spoon, I know you wrote about Raheem Mostert this week. I'm writing about Tyreek Hill this afternoon. So I'm going to let you speak on Mostert first. This is a guy that ran all over the Packers in the 2019 NFC Championship game. Are there any lessons to be learned from that? What do you do rolling in on Sunday to stop a running back like that?
Yeah, well, I think some of it is the Packers have to be a lot more disciplined than they were against San Francisco. They're going to see a lot of the same RPOs, motion, shifts, all the kind of things that Kyle Shanahan did against them that kind of screwed them up in that NFC Championship game. And they just weren't disciplined. They didn't hold their gaps. They didn't read their keys. I think they were just sloppy. And if they learned anything out of that game, it's that you need to be 100% focused in on your keys. So, you know, if your blocker's going to the left, you better understand why he's going to the left. You know, if your man's going to the right, why is he going to the right? You know, you have certain rules as to that. And they can't do a lot of freelancing. They have got to be really on their game against that kind of a running attack.
Do you feel, based on previous performances the past few weeks, that they can do that?
They might be able to. I mean, there's been a few things that teams have been able to do against Miami to kind of frustrate them. One of those, I think, is they have to get up on those wide receivers and disrupt them, because Miami wants to get rid of the ball out of Tua's hands really quickly. And that's not something that Joe Barry does very often. But you watch a lot of Miami games and teams get up there and they try to take away that short stuff because – you know, Tua's getting it out of his hand quickly, and he's very accurate. So if the Packers sit back in zone, then I think they're going to be in trouble.
To that point, I spoke to some of the DBs yesterday about, like, you know, what do you do against a guy like Tyreek Hill, who, you know, call a spade, has the speed that's going to beat you. What other ways do you try to beat him? And Jair Alexander specifically said you have to beat him at the line. Like, if you let him, he said he's going to beat you. Like, he's going to speed past you. So you've got to beat him at the line and try to knock him off of his route there. He said, and if he does beat you, and he said, there's going to be some times when he beats you and you just have to live with that. He said, when he does beat you, you've got to have your safety help over the top. Ryan, that's the part that concerns me if I'm the Packers, because I feel like the miscommunication, especially in the secondary, has not handed guys off very well when they're playing that sort of zone defense, and you have to have that help over the top.
Yeah, well, you know, and it depends on how much zone they play, and I think that that's an open question. If they're just taking a corner and man and jamming Tyreek Hill the line of scrimmage with the safety over the top, there's less communication that's involved with that than zone. So how they come out and play is going to be a – but it's absolutely right. I mean – you can be really, really fast, and Tyreek Hill obviously is really, really fast, but it's all about rhythm and timing in the passing game. And if you can disrupt that, it doesn't matter how fast you are if you are not on time. So that is the charge for the Packers secondary this week, is to get to it and Tyreek off time. And if they're able to do that, they'll have success. If they're not, it's going to be a long day.
Tyreek Hill's 40 time is 4.2. Guys, I didn't even think that was possible. I thought that was a number that people threw out just to try to seem impressive when and used it when people didn't know necessarily that a 4.240 time was impossible.
To give reference to that, Christian Watson's is 4.3, and we know what kind of speed he has. Now, Tyreek Hill doesn't have anything close to Usain Bolt speed. I know he's said that over the years. There isn't a player in the history of the NFL that can come close when it comes to pure speed to Usain Bolt. we're talking about a different classification of fast, but Tyreek Hill is one of the fastest players in NFL history. So he's faster than Christian Watson, and Christian Watson is one of the fastest players in the league.
Yeah, and he's not 4.2. He's 4.29. You know, that's what he did at the combine. I mean, there's been faster guys than him. John Ross, I think, ran a faster 40 than him. Raheem Mostert is right up there with his 40. I think Hill's, yes, he's fast, but his quickness is what, you know, an ability to stop and turn on a dime is what really makes him dangerous. And, you know, you can't really cover him very long man-to-man. You know, you're going to have some kind of help. But if somehow you can knock him off his route, then you're in a lot better shape.
He's basically, to me, and Spoon, tell me if you disagree, but he's almost, because I, you know, he's faster than Christian Watson, but they're comparable. The quickness is where Christian Watson don't have that kind of quickness, and Davante Adams doesn't have that kind of speed. But the key to Davante Adams' game has always been quickness, especially around the line of scrimmage, getting off his release package. Tyreek Hill is like Christian Watson, only a little faster with Davante Adams type quickness. Like it's a package of both. That's what makes him just unreal.
Unstoppable. Yeah. Let's talk about the people that the Packers have. Specifically AJ Dillon, who cleared concussion protocol pretty quickly this week. Monday night after the game, he had to turn down post-game interviews because he said, I'm in concussion protocol. I can't have the lights in my eyes. But I think by Wednesday, he was able to do stuff again, and he completely cleared concussion protocol. He was not listed on the injury report today. Spoon, I'm going to start with you here on this part, because I know you've said a couple of times now, the key to this game is going to be keeping Tua and Waddle and Hill and Mostert on the bench. How much does having A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones both on the field help with that?
Well, it's the strength of their team, continues to be the strength of their team. And so they got to run the ball. If Miami's going to sit back and, you know, in a two shell, which I'm not sure that they will. I mean, they are known as a blitzing team, and they will bring pressure. They weren't afraid to bring some pressure against Josh Allen a week ago. Then, you know, the Packers are probably going to have to be kind of balanced. I mean, they're going to want to establish Dillon and Jones early, but they've just got to have extended drives. They can't have you know, a lot of three and outs or five and outs, six and outs, or whatever it ends up being. They have to eat up a lot of clock, and whether that's, you know, you can use the short passing game like a run, but they got to, I'm sure that Jones and Dillon have to be a big part of this game plan.
Ryan, whether you're running or passing or trying to be balanced, it always helps to have a solid left tackle. What's the update on David Bakhtiari?
Well, he's nearing a return to the field, but he's not going to play this week. It's potential that he could practice on Friday, but he's not going to return to the game this week. He told me that he's day to day. This is a long routine now, that he's not going to tip a competitive advantage on his status to an opponent. But he made it very clear that his goal is to return this season. He wants to return this season. He just isn't saying when. And so getting him on the practice field, whenever that happens, if it's tomorrow, the sooner the better for him and for the team. That's the first step. But he's going to have a practices build on each other and ramp up to actually playing snaps before he's able to go, especially with this type of do you call it an injury, a fluke medical emergency? You know, it's wild the way that this whole thing happened. He recounted it today. And on Thursday night before the Bears game, this was, I think, December 2nd, he was having, the classic appendicitis symptom, which is right lower abdominal pain, but he had no other symptoms. It was just, he didn't know if he'd strained something or maybe a bruise, or he didn't know what it was. He was lying on the couch, and he turns to his wife, Frankie, who is 5 days from giving birth to their daughter. And he says, hey, can you like Google lower right stomach pain? And she does, but she kind of gives him a look like, you know, wives might give their husbands at the end of pregnancy, like you're complaining. Like I'm about to pop out of me here. And they look it up and they didn't really find anything because there was no fever. He didn't have an upset stomach. It was just, it hurt to touch. And the next day he comes to the team facilities and he immediately reports it to the medical staff and they think that he's joking. Like they, if there's anyone, you got to understand, if there's anyone in this locker room who would pull a prank about appendicitis or anything, like it would be David Bakhtiari. He's the resident jokester in this locker room. So at first they didn't take him serious. They did scans. And sure enough, his appendix, is that the word for it, was a couple days away from rupturing. Like it had flamed to the point where he couldn't take medicine. He couldn't take a pill to let the inflammation go down. They had to remove the entire appendix and then staple his colon shut with some 500 staples. He was frankly fortunate that he caught it in time. There was no leakage or anything like that. It was a very serious medical situation. And then he's been recovering from that for the last 3 weeks. He said in the way that only David Bakhtiari can, that the first poop was not fun. it was painful. Like it was not an enjoyable process for him to go back from where he was to where he is now. And where he is now is 4 surgeries since January 7th of 2021. A guy that's been through hell and back, literally, but he still wants to play. He's Matt LaFleur said today when I asked him, they're not shutting David Bakhtiari down for the season. They are hopeful that he can come back at some point.
Let me ask you both a question. I want to get both of your opinions on this. I get that. I get where Matt LaFleur is coming from. I get where David Bakhtiari is coming from. The Packers go to Miami on Sunday and lose, and they're essentially mathematically out of playoff contention at that point. If you're David Bakhtiari, do you really come home just to play the Vikings and Lions in a game that only matters in draft capital at that point?
Spoon? Well, it might be good for your career if for some reason you get cut and someone wants to see whether you can still play, and having a little bit of tape at the end of this year wouldn't hurt. So I think it's probably in his best interest to try to play if he's, you know, of course you don't push it if you're in danger of popping those staples or whatever. But if he's cleared medically, I think he would want to play. And I don't think they'd have a problem putting him out there. I think it would be good for him to know going into next season, you know, that he can go out and play a full game again.
You know, the most frustrating part about this for him is that, and he told me, the knee situation had really stabilized before the appendectomy. In the, you know, he had the surprise absence against Washington week 7. And in the 5 games after that, he played 100% of snaps in 4 of them. He played 100% of snaps in the Thursday night game against the Titans 4 days after playing 100% of snaps against the Cowboys. He had finally, he felt, figured out how to stay on the field, play every snap, which was a long, long journey and process for him to get to that point. And then a complete fluke medical situation. And if he's the one person in the locker room that, you know, might be liable to prank something like that, he's also the one person in the locker room with everything he's been through that would be liable to have that happen to. Because as he said, his road has been wild, and you just add this on top. It's frustrating. So there's no question in my mind, if he's cleared 100%, he wants to play for the reason that Spoon just highlighted. He doesn't know what the future is. So he doesn't know if he'll be here. He doesn't know if he's going to be somewhere else. He wants to continue his career. He's going to want to put some film on the field.
He's like the personification of Murphy's Law the past couple of years. Yeah, and like that's a good point about wanting to just kind of get some post 4th surgery film just to kind of show that, you know, he can keep it up. I saw that the Packers practiced inside today. As we said, I wasn't there. I came on home. We made such a big deal. I don't know if we did, but there was such a big deal made about the weather for Monday night versus the Rams. You know, I think it was like 14 at kickoff and such and such. You're going to Miami this weekend, where for Miami it's going to be cold, but I think it's going to be in the 60s. So Packers practicing inside this weekend to sort of get ready for that. Is there anything to that big of a swing in playing in two such different climates in less than 7 days?
Well, they're getting a huge benefit that it's not going to be 75 degrees. It's supposed to be like in the 50s, maybe 60s.
Right.
That you know, I'm not happy about it, Spoon. I sure wouldn't mind a little 75 degree weather down there. That'd be okay with me. But it's good for the team. I mean, if it's 50, if this is the 50s down there, that's a huge, that 20 degree difference.
I don't know. If I were them, I'd be energized as all hell if I came there and the sun was out. You know, I think I would be like, great. You know, I feel really good today. You know, I'm getting my vitamin D and I'm all set to go. You know, that's how I would feel. I mean, if it's 80 degrees, then that's a big difference. But I don't think it's going to be anything like that. And I don't think that it may rain, you know. So I don't know if that is any kind of a factor. I don't think it really is. I think, you know, at this point of the season, it's just two teams who've played in all kinds of conditions. You know, Miami just played in a really cold game in Buffalo, and they're coming back home. So I don't think there's anything to the weather.
You know, like when you become a sports reporter and people are like, oh, so you talk about sports. I feel like I talk about sports, weather, muscles, laws. You have to know, like, for every law they break, for every bone they break, you got to know about it. Hey, that kind of rolled right off the tongue. I didn't even mean it to. One more thing I want to kind of really touch on here. And Ryan, I know you wrote about it this week. We've seen Keyshawn Nixon become the spark that this team and sideline can really use at times. But I know you dug into, like, why did it take so long to get him out there? What did you come away having learned?
I had no idea. They didn't take a single punt return rep in practice until he had his first one against the Cowboys. That's the first one of his career.
Was in the game?
First one was in the game. He had zero reps in practice before then, which is stunning because when Matt LaFleur says we didn't know what we had, there's a good reason for it. They looked for what they had. Keyshawn Nixon was asking them all the time, let me punt return, because he's just like you or I or anyone else. I mean, he saw Amari Rodgers, and Keyshawn Nixon didn't throw Amari Rodgers on the bus, but let's be real. He saw what was happening. He knew that he could do something about it. That's what makes him different than everyone else. He was asking, kept getting declined, and finally, after Amari Rodgers had that fumble, that muff punt against the Cowboys, and they flipped the field, turned the entire momentum of the game. I think it was 14-14 at the time. The Cowboys scored a touchdown 4 plays later on a short field. Finally, the Packers had enough. Weeks after, I think, all their fans had enough. Yeah. Put Keyshawn Nixon in there, and the first one he catches like this, like it's a high pass from a quarterback.
Yeah, I played it.
He hadn't practiced it, so what do you expect? Ever since he was put onto the field, ever since they said, yes, okay, you can return a punt, he has changed their punt return game. He's only had 6 returns in 4 games, but he has averaged 15.3 yards per return, which is second in the NFL. It's not a fluke. He's 25.4 yards per kickoff return, which is third in the NFL. He has been, since he's gotten an opportunity, one of the best return specialists in the league by the numbers.
I have a question with that. You said his kickoff return average is 25.3? 4. Now, yeah. Sometimes he's bringing it out from 5 yards into the end zone. But for the most part, he's getting them around where they would be with a touchback. And I've had a fan asked me, what was a legitimate question? What's the point of risking injury if he's only going to get it to where the touchback was? However, you're still getting it to where the touchback would be. So you're taking it over in the same amount of play in the same space for the most part. And it feels like every time he brings it out, he just gives a jolt of energy to that sideline. So if you're going to be taking it around the 25 anyways, wouldn't it be worth it to be running out there energized?
It's more obvious. Break one off.
Yeah, he's going to break one off here soon.
He's not fielding every single one in the end zone. Some of these get fielded at, you know, the 2, 3, 5 yard line, and he's getting past the 30.
Yeah.
So, and then the times that, you know, he can break off a 40 yarder, it's that's all the better. You know, why not take that opportunity to roll the dice that you're going to get out to possibly really good field position. So, I don't really see that as like risky. I think it's sort of a risk reward, and I think they've been rewarded more than they've been punished for him.
Let's all place our bets right now. Do you think he'll score a return touchdown? It could be punt or kickoff. Do you think he'll score a return touchdown before the end of the season?
No.
Probably not. I mean,
I'm going to say yes.
Miami's kicker leads the league in touchbacks. Uh-huh. And he's like eighth in touchback percentage. And so they're not kicking. Every ball is going to be out of the end zone if they can.
And we saw versus the Rams, people have started kicking away from Nixon too.
Yeah. So kickoff, punt return is where he's going to have to make an impact. And, you know, they got a veteran punter who maybe he's just going to directionally kick and try to take him out of that, out of the game. You know, that's what you try to do with really good returners. And now the Packers have one. So I'd be surprised if he gets a lot of opportunities. Opportunities is what allows you to, break a big one.
I'm just
for the record, if y'all had both said yes, I would have said no.
I'm just playing the law of averages. There's three games left. You guys know the last time that the Packers took any type of punt or kickoff to the house?
When?
Yeah, it was Micah Hyde took a punt, I think.
Yeah. 2014, he took two. Do you know the last time they took a kickoff to the house?
Cobb in 2011?
Exactly. Three games left. We're talking about something that hasn't happened in nine seasons.
Real quick, because I know y'all have to go. So when I say like 60 seconds or less, I mean 60 seconds or less. Jair Alexander was named to his second Pro Bowl this week, which I know this year is like a glorified touch football game. Is that a controversial decision? Because I think when you like get on Twitter and you hear from fans, you think he's having the worst season of his career. And then you talk to coaches and talk to players, and he's still one of the best corners in the game. Like, where's the middle ground there? Was that a good selection to the Pro Bowl for Jair?
I wouldn't say controversial. I would say unwarranted would probably be the word that I would use. I don't think he's been a Pro Bowl corner this year. He's given up way too many long completions, 3.5 touchdowns. I think I could name a number of corners who've had better years than he has. So I don't think it was warranted. I think he made it on his name.
Do you know how the voting breakdown was between fan, coach, player? But is anyone?
It's been one third, one third, one third, but I don't know if they changed that.
I'm just
one half.
I'm wondering the results. And the reason I'm wondering is because, yeah, it used to be much more prevalent than this. It used to be Looney Tunes land because they, fans just look at stats and they don't really look at film. And stats and film in this game.
Players did too, really. They really didn't. A ton of attention. I think probably the coaches were the ones who did the most.
Yeah, coaches probably film, players reputation, fan stats, right? Well, Jair Alexander's reputation after paid is very high. His stats, I think, is where it sways for him. I'm not saying the film, but he's got 4 interceptions this year. It's by far his most in his career. People see that, they vote him in. Mm-hmm. Coaches, they might not. Jair Alexander's not having his best year. Clearly, but the stats, and that's how Pro Bowls usually get decided. The stats are in his favor. So in terms of how it got decided, it's pretty run-of-the-mill for Pro Bowl voting.
I'm kind of, somewhere in the middle of what y'all said and agreeing with what a lot of y'all said. Like, I think some of the long stuff he's given up is a product of the defense they were playing and not having the help he necessarily thought he would. However, if you're the highest paid corner in the league, you can make up for that. Like, you find a way to make the play. I mean, we saw Jalen Ramsey almost single-handedly put the Rams back into that game the other night. You find a way to make it happen. So I know y'all got to get to coaches real quick. just give me your quick prediction for Packers Dolphins on Sunday. Ryan?
I got Dolphins. I'm really curious how they're going to come out offensively with their approach. On one hand, I understand the whole they got to run the football. But the problem with that is that the Dolphins are an explosive offense. They don't need the football a lot to score. At some point, the Packers are going to need to score. So how do they balance that? I think it's going to be really fascinating to watch.
Spoon?
I'm taking the Dolphins. That's it. That's all I could say. I'm taking the Dolphins. I think they're going to win. Yeah. Probably by 10 points.
I think it's a close first half, and then the Dolphins just break away, and this is not an offense that you can afford to let get even a one-touchdown lead on you, because they're going to run away with it. I think I picked them to win by 14. So we will not all be there to cover it for you all. Ryan and Spoon will be there in person, but Pete and I will still hold down the fort for you from our respective homes as well over the Christmas weekend. Because of that, things are going to be a little different on Sunday, so no pregame Facebook. Pete and I will have our postgame Facebook. The podcast will be a day late just so that we can all get at least a little bit of time to spend with our friends and family on the holiday. Guys, go stay safe, stay warm. Don't get swept away in this snow. Have fun in Miami, and we will see you next week. Thanks so much. This has been the Green 19 Podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com.